Hello and welcome to The Ordinary Knitter, the podcast that's mostly about the projects. Hello and welcome to episode 16 of The Ordinary Knitter. This week, Budapest, sock knitting, knitting in public, and knitting spotting. Hello and welcome to episode 16 of The Ordinary Knitter. Budapest, should we get that out of the way first? Goes without saying, I had a really brilliant time. It's a fantastic city. If you're ever looking for somewhere to go for a weekend, I can heartily recommend it. We had effectively four full days. We arrived very late on Friday night and we left again at 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon to go to the airport. So we more or less had four full days and we did quite a lot, but there's plenty more. As I mentioned previously, I went without my husband and children for very good reasons. And we're hoping to go back in April next year. It's very hot in the summer. So if you or your family don't do so well in very hot weather, I'm talking about 31 degrees with high humidity, then the spring is a really good time to go. It's still lovely and warm, but it's not really sweltering and the humidity hasn't started yet. So we're hoping to go back in April, and there's all sorts of things I noticed. There were no young children at all. The youngest person in our group was 25. So I was just noticing a few things that my 7-year-old, well, he'll be 8 by then, in particular would like to do. So it's only a couple of hours flight. We flew from Luton, but you can go from Birmingham, not Bristol at the moment. You can go from Birmingham and I'm sure you can go from other airports as well. So heartily recommended. I had been hoping to find a knitting shop in Budapest, and twice, on the way from the airport into my uncle's house, which was at least half an hour drive, I saw this same sort of hobby shop on the way in and the way back. But as we were to and fro the airport, I couldn't really say, stop, I want to get out. And apart from that, I saw no other shops of that sort at all. I saw not a single hobby shop of any description. The only thing that came close was a stationery shop in the Mammut Mall. So I was quite surprised. Maybe this is not something which has caught on in the same way as we have in the UK with, I mean, Hobbycraft for a start, but lots and lots of independent yarn shops and wider crafting shops. You know, crafting in the UK is quite a thing. And I was surprised to see so little evidence of it. So sadly, I came back empty-handed. I hadn't expected to buy yarn, but I certainly didn't come back with any. Also, I came back with no stitch markers. That's what I'd really hoped to get. I had visions of some lovely maybe blown glass or something stitch markers, and just, I don't know why I was surprised. I suppose for me they're such a normal thing to want and to need to buy, and they're lovely things to give as a gift. So I was just surprised, slightly disappointed, but there we go. But my uncle was sort of taking us around on a walking tour most of the time, and we kept up a fair old pace. As it was, I kept stopping to take photographs. I'm not sure how popular I would have been if I'd said, can I just go into this knitting shop? I don't think anyone else there would have understood. No one else there knits anyway. So that was a shame. I did see one single piece of evidence of knitting, and I put it on my Instagram page. I'm at The Ordinary Knitter on Instagram. There's a part of the city, one thing I'd never really got the hang of, partly because we were going at such a pace all the time, I didn't get my geography of the city. I couldn't tell most of the time where I was in relation to anything else. I mean, suppose at the very end of 4 days, one or two of those things started to drop into place, but we were told the names of so many squares and so many streets and so many buildings, and unfortunately they're not in my mind anymore. But there is one place in the city where there's a fairly recent and somewhat controversial monument to the freedom of Hungary following invasion by the Nazis. Unfortunately, the monument talks about invasion by the Germans, and this is where the controversy comes in, because the troops invaded under the Nazi flag, not the imperial eagle, and this is what some people are upset about. But anyway, there's a shrine, I suppose, really is what you would call it, to a lot of people, a lot of the Jews who were sent to the concentration camps during the war. Budapest, like many cities, had a pretty terrible time and a somewhat questionable role in all of that. And it's quite heartbreaking. There's lots of little shoes and there's lots of photographs, and you just can't stay dry-eyed looking at something like that. And I noticed just next to it, there was a knitted Je suis Charlie, a sort of panel, a piece that had been put around a tree. So I took a photograph of that and I put it on my Instagram page. And that is the only public knitting that I saw. I didn't see a single person actually knitting in public or anything at all. I didn't even see an old lady with her knitting sticking out of her bag. So there you go. While I was there, I wouldn't have had any time to do any knitting at all. So I did leave it all at home, and I didn't regret that decision at any point. And I was right about the elbow room. When you travel steerage, there's not much elbow room for knitting. So there you go. I've mentioned before that Stacey Perry of Very Pink Knits has started a podcast, and it takes the form of a Q&A. And I could talk probably about virtually every single issue that she raises, but one really struck me this week. Somebody had asked her the question, as if they were knitting socks two at a time, could they use both ends of the same ball of yarn? And Stacey had lots of very good reasons for saying that you really shouldn't do this, and this is why it's a bad idea. And it struck me because I always do it. I find it's actually a lot less hassle to have one ball of yarn than it is to have two on the go. I mean, if you think one ball of yarn can get tangled, all you actually need to do is lift your yarn, pull each of the main strands coming out of the ball, and it just whizzes round and untangles itself. Although I try to prevent it getting to that stage in the first place. But if you've got two balls of yarn, personally for me, my inner kitten comes out, and I could just imagine that being a total disaster. She did mention something which I've never experienced. Perhaps it depends on your yarn. She said that one end of your yarn can become sort of unraveled and split out a lot, and that can cause you problems with your knitting. I haven't found that happens, but possibly because I'm knitting socks for my husband and he likes some wool in the yarns, maybe that's got something to do with it. But let's say using Regia yarns, which is all I've ever used for knitting socks, I don't have a problem with that. So what do you do? If you do yours two at a time, do you use one ball or two? I can understand why using one ball might sound a bit, you do what? But actually, I find that's not a problem. Which leads me seamlessly onto these socks that I've nearly finished, that I have done with an afterthought or a forethought heel, depending on how you want to describe it. It took me a few days to get back into knitting when I got back, partly because inevitably when you get back from a few days away, you've got various things to sort out. Also, it was the school holidays had started, and that had various consequences. But the other thing, and it puzzled me and took a couple of days to kick in, I was incredibly tired. I was going to bed at 9:30 in the evening. I was dozing off literally two or three times during the day. Every time I sat down, it seemed. I even fell asleep on Saturday morning, sitting waiting in the car while my son and my husband nipped into the supermarket for Saturday morning treats. It's ridiculous. I began to think there was something wrong with me. My husband just reckons that, I mean, literally we must have walked 5 miles a day for 4 days, which I really enjoyed, and that's kind of what I used to do when I walked everywhere. But these days it's incredibly unusual. My husband reckons it was just my body making up for it. Maybe so, who knows. Anyway, because of that, I wasn't knitting in the evenings in the same way. And if I'd pick my knitting up and I'd do half a row, and I'd be struggling to keep my eyes open. So I'm a little bit further behind with these socks than where I would have expected to be. But the heels are all done. Everything is back on the needles, and I've now finished doing the pattern on the leg, and I'm into the 1x1 rib. So I'm sort of, once everything was back on the needles, I was back into familiar territory. But what an almighty faff. Maybe I have gone about this a really upside down and difficult way, and that wouldn't surprise me. But So far, I'm glad I've done it, in as much as, you know, now I know, I have an understanding of what's involved, and I also know I never ever want to do it again. I'm just stunned at all the places where there is scope for it to go wrong. As I said last time, I was dropping stitches as I was putting things on and off needles. I still find there's the odd curiosity here or there that I just don't quite understand how that happened, despite following a video showing how to avoid getting the little hole at the apex of the heel. I've still got the little holes. I tried the socks on my husband yesterday, and they are quite a nice fit. That was my big worry, is that because I've never done it before, I wouldn't have the same judgment over where to put the heel and how it would work out. I was a little bit worried that the point of the heel, or the ridge, because that's the only word for it, where you've kitchened the point of the heel, I was a little bit worried that might be under the sole of his heel or partway up the Achilles tendon or something. Fortunately, that's not the case. It does stick off the back of his foot slightly. And then looking at it, really, I found myself thinking, surely the sort of, if you want to think of it like this, the right angle of your heel, the point where it stops being the sole of your foot and starts being the back of your ankle, you should see me chopping my hands around in the air, surely that's the last place that you want a ridge. And you inevitably get a bit of a ridge when you've kitchened. It's just not, however skillful you are with it, it's just not the same as something which is straight round knitting, which is what you get with a Flegel heel. Flegel heel uses short rows to shape the heel, so you get no interruption, that you just seamlessly flow round. I've loved the Flegel heel for a few years now, and having tried this way of doing a heel, I just can't understand why anybody wouldn't do a Flegel heel, to be honest. It solves, I think, so many problems that you could potentially come across with turning a heel. So between dropping stitches, constantly having to put things on and off needles, and having a ridge across the back of a heel, why would anybody do this? Tell me, please, if I've missed something, and there is some wondrous aspect to doing your heels like this, which I've just completely been blind to, please tell me, because I'd love to understand. At the moment, it just seems like a lose-lose all round. Plus, with all this farting about, with needles, stitches on and off the needle, and this, that, and the other, it takes so much longer. But I must say, I'm doing the cuff now, so another couple of evenings and they'll be sorted. So I'm enormously glad to be out the other side of it. And I can't say I'll ever be doing this type of heel again. Sadly, I had to miss my last knit and natter. It was the morning after I'd got back extremely late the night before from being away, and I just knew there's no way I would get away with disappearing off the next morning to my knitting group. So I'll have missed something like, I worked out something like 7 weeks, because it's not every week either, which is a little bit of a pain. I wish it was, but there we are. My mother organised it originally, which is quite funny because she's not really a terribly keen knitter, so I'm not really sure what prompted her to do this, but she was telling me that at the next Knit and Natter, they've agreed that they're going to be teaching people who want to learn to knit. And I've got lots of questions about that, which I haven't had the chance to ask her yet. So I haven't really got any mental picture of how that's going to work. I don't know where the people are going to come from, because we don't advertise or anything, so I don't quite know how that's going to work. But I'm really looking forward to it. If you're in North Herefordshire, that's going to be at the Grange in Leinster on Wednesday the 10th. Just let me double check. Wednesday the 10th of August from 10 o'clock in the morning. So that should be good fun. On a similar note, I'd like to tell you about a session also called Knit and Natter in Gloucester. It's at a place called That White Room on Moorlands Trading Estate, Clifton Road, Gloucester, GL15RZ, which I'm reliably informed is opposite Aldi car park entrance, my most recent trip to Gloucester, and my next trip to Gloucester is to go to the rugby. So I don't know where Aldi is. So I hope those instructions get you to the right place. They have recently started a session. My contact for that is a lady on Twitter whose username is at mgibbon with a double B. She let me know about this. This is on Thursdays from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. There's a nominal charge of £1 a pop. And their blurb is, come along and knit and natter for charity. Everything made will be donated to good causes in Gloucester. All donations of wool gratefully received. Make hats, scarves, baby blankets, etc. All abilities welcome. So if you'd like to do some knitting for charity, and it's something, I talk about the road to hell being paved with good intentions, I am always meaning to knit things for charity. Knitted knockers is the thing I really want to do, and perhaps I should do that before I move on to my next project. But if you want to knit for charity, and or you need to learn to knit, or you feel that you could benefit from knitting in company with people who are more experienced than you, which in most things we want to try and do in life is a really good approach, then why not go along? If I was closer, I'm probably a hour and a half away from Gloucester. It's not really an afternoon's destination, unfortunately. If you're looking for more information, you can email info@thatwhiteroom.co.uk. So I'd love to hear if anybody goes along, and let me know all about it. I'd love to hear. I talked before about a KnitPro needle that broke, and initially I got really good service from KnitPro. They spotted my post on Instagram, somebody got in touch and said bloody bloody blah. Long and short of it is, eventually, after I chased them up, I got an email from somebody at KnitPro double checking what it was I needed and asking for my address so that they could send me a needle. That was great. Unfortunately, that was now 2 weeks ago. I've emailed again since to say to them, oh, you know, just to let you know I haven't received it. Hope it's not lost in the post. That was last week. Again, I haven't heard anything, so sort of jury's out a little bit on the customer service for that at the moment. Still scope to improve that, so we'll wait and see. I've talked before, a few weeks ago now, about spotting knitwear. I've been at talks, and I've sort of generally been sitting somewhere where someone's been near to me, and I've been scrutinising what they're wearing, just trying to work out whether it's homemade or not. And sometimes it's really obvious. And my son's friend came round some previous holiday a few months ago, and immediately I spotted his jumper, and I said to his mum, oh, did you make that? Thinking, oh, someone else I know is a knitter, and I hadn't realised how wonderful. And she said, oh no, so-and-so's mum made it. Because this lad, there's one lad in my son's class who's quite a lot taller than all the others, and his mum had very thoughtfully passed on some things that he'd outgrown to this other family. I think this kind of thing makes the world go round. We're always passing things on and gratefully taking things that other people have grown out of. I personally don't think there's any shame in that. I like secondhand things. So when this little boy came around the other day and plonked his jumper on the dining table as he wandered off with my son to go up to his bedroom, immediately I thought, it's got that look about it. And so I picked it up and I was having a look at it, and I'm sure it was handmade. It was a lovely grey marl hoodie. And I have to say, the weather here has been so poor that a grey marl hoodie, this was late July, and quite as daft as it might sound. And that was rather lovely. And I don't know if any of you have been watching The Living and the Dead. If you have, and if you've worked out what's going on, please could you let me know? It's quite fun, but I haven't got a clue. So there's a jumper that Colin Morgan's character, Nathan Appleby, that he's worn a few times, and it's a lovely grey jumper with a sort of fisherman's neck. It's not a rollover neck, and it's not a flat round neck. It's a sort of, what do you call it? Is it a traditional crew neck? It's a kind of stand up ridged neck, slightly boaty as well. It's looser than a normal collar, and it's really lovely. And I've noticed several of the women are wearing these sort of shawls that they crossed over and they tucked in, I think, to their waistbands. And I can see that I there's a lot said about shawls at the moment. Generally, most of the podcasts, the knitting podcasts that I listen to, with the exception of Very Pink, actually, are talking about shawls. They just seem to be the thing at the moment. But I'm always concerned that I would get very tangled up in a shawl, so I don't wear them. It's not an item of clothing I've ever worn. Now, I know I said the same thing about fingerless gloves and ended up being a convert, so we'll see. But that jumper was just gorgeous, so it's made me think that it's the kind of thing I might look at, possibly for my husband, but also for my son, because I need to knit him at least two jumpers. And I had thought that a jumper for him would be my next project. We're off again in a couple of weeks to see some relatives, and we'll be away for about 3 days, and a little bit longer than that, actually. And I think I'll take that knitting with me then, because of course my son will be with me, so if necessary I can try it on him. And because we're driving, I can stick my big I Love Beer knitting bag in the boot, and in theory I'm made. So that's what I'd like to do. But thinking about what I was just saying about charity knitting, I should perhaps make a knitted knocker first. The only thing is, at a quick glance, I don't have any flesh-toned yarn. It's not something you generally have, is it, really? So I'll see what's what with that. I imagine that, although obviously these can be made in quite a variety of flesh tones, I don't imagine anybody wants it in blue or grey. So we'll have to see. And this Saturday, the shrug that I made will get its outing. This is the shrug, the evening shrug by Pearl Soho that I made a few weeks ago now. It is a bit on the big side. There we go. You learn something every time. But I'd rather that than too small. And given the temperatures that we've been having in the evening lately, I think at the very least I'm going to need that, and quite possibly with a thick winter coat over the top. So we'll see. But I will at least get my opportunity to wear it. And I haven't actually tried it with the dress. I possibly should do that. In the meantime, now, thanks to a lovely lady on Twitter whose name now escapes me, and I'm not going to go off and look it all up now, but I'll try to put it in the show notes. She mentioned a website called Lindybop, lindybop.co.uk, that does 50s inspired fashion. Now, I love that type of thing. I don't wear vintage, and I don't wear a lot of really obviously old styled clothing, but I do love a halter neck. And although I'm carrying too much weight at the moment, my upper half isn't too bad. And many of these clothes kind of flatter that. And I've ended up buying a dress, which wasn't the intention at all, and all because I followed a link in a tweet. anyway, it's lovely. It was only £12 in the sale, so really, you know. And it's not actually a halter neck, bizarrely, after all that. When it arrived and I put it on, I thought, but it was a halter neck. And I looked at the original listing and it's not. It's just me getting confused, but I still like it. So I'm going to have to struggle against myself not to wear that, because although I have a cardigan that goes with it perfectly, I didn't make it. And I bought the yarn and I made this shrug specifically for that particular dress that I've already got. So I'm going to have to make myself wear that, I think. So I'll report back on what it's like actually to wear it. Thank you very much for listening to episode 16. I still continue to be really amazed by the sheer volume of people, to me, relatively speaking, who actually bother to listen to me wittering on about knitting. Oh, something I must say, I nearly forgot. That would have been such a shame. If you saw my Instagram feed yesterday, Monday the 1st of August, you will have seen I posted a picture of a bowl of balls of yarn and knitting needles that were outside a shop in Leinster, and they had a sign attached to it with words to the effect of, if you've got time, why not sit down, do a couple of rows, and let's see what we've got at the end. This is a shop in Leinster called Clever Betsy. I think I talked about this in one of my very earliest podcasts. They work with adults who have a range of learning disabilities, and they seem to have a wonderful time, and they are just an endlessly creative bunch of people. There's always something new and different going on at Clever Betsy, and I've bought all sorts of things in there. Everything they have in there is donated for sale, old patterns, old needles, and also the people who go there in the day, they make various things to sell. You can't go in there and not come out inspired in some way. It's a great place. So I couldn't walk past, even though I knew my daughter was waiting for me in the car, I couldn't walk past an invitation in the street to knit. So I put down, I was carrying something like 24 loo rolls, very glamorous, so I put those down, disassociated myself from them, picked up knitting needles and yarn and started off knitting. And then I noticed that somebody was crossing the road towards me, which isn't that unusual just there, but she seemed to be really walking towards me, and I looked up and it was someone from my knitting group. I thought that was all a bit cosmically weird and spooky. And it was Alison, who I interviewed a few weeks ago about the problems she'd had with the vent in the back of the little baby cardigan that she'd been making. It was great to see her. So we were standing there nattering away, and I was using a blue yarn and the pointiest needles ever. I put my finger on the end of the needle at one point to sort of move some stitches up and just about yelped in pain. I don't use the really, really sharp ones, and it was quite a shock. So I was knitting with some very sort of boring blue acrylic, and there was a really vibrant sort of raspberry pink in there as well. So I started working some of that into it. So that was great fun. After a couple of rows, I said, I'm going to have to go. My daughter's going to be wondering what's happened to me. She said, oh, yes, yeah, my husband will be wondering where I am. So I got into the car, drove off, did the next errand, which I think was buying hen bedding. My daughter made some comment, and I suddenly remembered two things I'd forgotten to get when we'd been in town just a few minutes before, and I had to get them. So I went back in, parked in the same space as before, fortunately. Went to the shop I needed to go to, and just happened, I swear this was complete chance, I just happened then to walk past that same knitting place again, so I had to do a couple more rounds. So that was good fun. I absolutely love things like that. So let me know, have you taken part in any completely unexpected and random acts of public yarn worship? I think it's wonderful. And I did get one or two looks while I was doing it, not so much when I was with Alison, but when I was on my own again a few minutes later. I just would have really loved it if somebody had stopped and said, oh, what's this? What are you doing? Or, oh gosh, you know, I'd love to have a go, but I don't know how to knit, or I haven't knitted for 30 years. Then I could have said to them, well, come along to the Grange in Leinster on the 10th of August and we'll show you what to do. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. You can find me on Twitter at the Ord Knitter, on Ravelry as Ordinary Knitting, and on Instagram as at the Ordinary Knitter. And I look forward to hearing from you and talking to you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.